Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions. With me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby. And as I had promised the last time when I chatted with the Kidney Association of Barbados, I would chat with them again so we can continue the conversation around kidney care, renal failure, and so much more. So let me welcome back President Sadianne Cisnett, Public Relations Officer Sabrina Newton, and Adrian Boyce, Vice President. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So the last time we spoke, you did share a little about the Kidney Association and the work it does. So listeners who may have missed that first episode, just give us a gentle reminder about the work of the Kidney Association, Sadianne.
All right. So the Barbados Kidney Association, that is our official registered name, Barbados Kidney Association. We are a registered charity of Barbados. We want to ensure that our membership, the kidney disease sufferers, as well as transplant patients and dialysis patients, are given as good a life as possible while on dialysis, while suffering with kidney disease. So we are here to advocate for our members as well as their families, because family support is extremely important, support in general, whether from friends or family, and just to ensure that our membership and their families are educated, the public is educated on kidney disease and renal failure and dialysis.
Okay, and how often do you meet?
We generally meet online. Our executive or our council meets once per month. And again, we look at the needs of the membership, the kidney disease sufferers, their families, as well as dialysis patients in Barbados. And we also meet to plan activities, fundraising, and that kind of thing.
Nice. And if anyone listening wants to reach out to you, how can they get in touch? Do you have a website, social media handles?
Yeah, we do have social media. We have Instagram and Facebook. We have the Barbados Kidney Association on Facebook. And the same thing on Instagram. We also have the secretary.
Our email address is 246kidneyassociation@gmail.com. Again, it is 246kidneyassociation@gmail.com.
Okay, so let's look at how much do you think the general public of Barbados generally understands kidney failure and kidney care?
I would hazard a guess to say not a lot of persons, unless they are involved or a family member or a friend has kidney disease and they know about it. Kidney disease can come from a myriad of different ways. 80% of deaths in Barbados are from NCDs, or non-communicable diseases, and several are linked to kidney failure. So if you have uncontrolled diabetes, that can lead to kidney failure. Uncontrolled hypertension, that can lead to kidney failure. You may have an infection that can lead to kidney disease or kidney failure as well. And there are autoimmune diseases, hereditary diseases that damage your kidneys and can lead to kidney failure.
Okay. And I think sometimes people do not understand or appreciate how some of the other chronic illnesses impact the kidney that can lead to renal failure.
Very true. So as I said before, once you have uncontrolled diabetes, hypertension, that can ultimately lead to kidney failure. Sometimes you would have to go straight into dialysis, because kidney disease is generally an invisible disease and it's not necessarily seen on the outside like certain other illnesses and diseases are. Sometimes you only know that you have kidney disease when you reach end stage renal failure or even stage four. You know, you retain water, you begin to swell up. Persons would then go to the doctor and realize, oh, my kidneys are not working. They're not filtering properly. I'm retaining all this water. So It's a largely invisible disease until you sometimes are at the point of no return and have to go straight on dialysis, unfortunately.
Okay, so Sadianne and Sabrina, let's talk a bit about kidney transplant. It's relatively new in Barbados. Walk us through the process. what actually happens if you wanted to have a kidney transplant. And I believe you had a kidney transplant, Sidian.
Yes, I did.
What's involved in all of it and the long-term effects?
Okay, so kidney transplantation right now is the only quote-unquote cure for kidney disease. It is basically having a good, healthy kidney being put into your body when your kidneys have stopped filtering. So the lead up to a transplant in Barbados at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital is actually quite extensive. It can take maybe anywhere from 6 to 9 months to go through all the testing. So your nephrologist at the hospital will be either Dr. Lisa Bell or Dr. Narissa Jerowan or Dr. Danielle Dottin. And they will be looking to see the kind of support you have at home. They'll be looking to see how well you're taking your medication, when it's prescribed for you as well, and your general health outside of the kidney disease, of course. So all of that is looked at, and then they send your blood tests and other tests overseas. They look at the genetic typing. So once you have a donor, again, we have live donor transplants at this time. That's what our legislation pertains to, live donor transplants. And someone, family member, friend, even a complete stranger can donate their kidney if they so desire. And these tests are done to ensure that there is a good match between your genetics and their genetics. This is because if you don't have a good enough match, your body can reject that kidney because it also happens for other organs as well. So the doctors then have to ensure that the match is a good match to ensure that your body doesn't reject the kidney because it is seen as a foreign object. It's not your kidney. So once all the tests are done, medical tests, yes, but they also look at psychiatric as well. You have a psychiatric evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just to see if you are in a place and your support system and everything is good for you to be able to have that transplant. Because once you have that transplant, you are kind of, let's put it in isolation. We all remember about isolation from COVID. You're kind of in isolation for the first 3 months because okay. Your medication is at a very high dose.
Mm-hmm.
So your immune system is now suppressed to be able to keep that kidney and not reject it. So you are susceptible to everything that can pass by. So for the first 3 months, you need to keep yourself in isolation, even from your friends and family, and sometimes even your children, because you know children obviously pick up a lot of illnesses, colds and whatnot from school. So you're in isolation for the first 3 months, and then the doctor begins to wean that medication down to a manageable level. So once that is done, mm-hmm. you can go back to work, go back to whatever you were doing before that, and your life is now your own. You're off of dialysis, whether it's peritoneal at home dialysis or whether it is at the hospital or at a dialysis clinic. You're no longer hooked up to any machines. So you are able to, again, live your life as freely as you did before and even better because you don't have that feeling of, you know, tiredness and pain and everything else that comes with kidney disease.
Okay. And will you, as the person receiving, the recipient of the kidney, remain on medication for the rest of your life?
You most certainly have to. You must remain on your medication regimen because that is what is preventing your body from rejecting that kidney and you having to go back on dialysis. And we also think about the sacrifice that was made for your donor to donate that kidney as well. So you want to keep that kidney as long as possible and for it to be as healthy as possible. So you remain on that medication. You do what you're supposed to do. Your water intake is still measured, not as strictly as before on dialysis, but you have to make sure you drink enough water on a daily basis. And there are a few foods that they advise you stay away from because it can interact with the medication or be harmful to the new kidney. But that doesn't restrict your life really in any way. It's just, you know, stay away from seafood or you stay away from yogurt kind of thing, you know, because it has live bacteria. But that kind of thing. But you basically have your life back as it was, and you just make sure that your medication regimen is adhered to, and you generally see the transplant coordinator, Nurse Shuri, and your nephrologist maybe once a month, or if you're really stable, once every couple of months to ensure that your blood tests are good.
Okay. And a few months ago, we would have heard a bit of information in the public around the Human Tissue Transplant Act.
Yep.
Right. Can you enlighten us as to when was this app first talked about and created and what stage it's at now?
The Human Tissue Transplant Bill, I believe, was brought to the Senate in 2022. I know it's been talked about for decades before that, but officially, I believe, I could be wrong, it was brought to the Senate in 2022. That was the first time. It has not yet been debated. So the Barbados Kidney Association, Ministry of Health, are pushing to get that bill to be debated so that the legislation can be looked at, there can be public awareness, and the bill could be passed. We have deceased donor. That's what the bill really speaks to. It speaks to life transplants as well, but we have regulations for that currently. What it generally speaks to is deceased donor donation. And I believe that there are quite a few countries in the Caribbean that already do this. Jamaica, for sure. Trinidad, for sure. Already do deceased donor donation. So we are hopeful and really pushing for the legislature to pass that bill, move that bill through, do the public education to ensure that persons who really need it, again, we are focused on kidney disease, but of course, it's all types of donation that the legislation speaks to, that persons can get that new lease on life. You take a bit of pressure off of those persons to donate tissue and organs that can be donated, and that there is life after disease for those persons as well.
Now, Sabrina, what more do you think needs to be done to further educate the public around renal failure, kidney disease?
That's a very good question, because what happens is the mode of the message, because everybody doesn't always have time to, you know, come to a meeting somewhere, set or whatever. So now it has to be more online, you know. So more has to be done, yes, because there is awareness. I've come across a lot of people that actually know some things about renal failure, but then to have some people that don't know, and they, you know, generally ask a question to say, you know, tell me what can happen, what I need to do to get tested or whatever have you. And speaking on that, there is a free testing at the Foreland Health Clinic where you can go and get your test done and know your status on your kidney health. And they give you information as to what goes on and, you know, how to maintain your kidneys in the best way possible. So like I said, there is a lot of work to be done. We're trying our best as the Barbados Kidney Association to raise public awareness, you know, by doing ads and even this segment, you know, so that it can start the conversation. So once this conversation has started, I believe from there, we would be able to pedal the conversation into a positive direction where we would get more persons interested in learning about kidney failure, because as Sadie said, it's a silent disease. And some people don't know about or don't understand it until they experience it, whether they personally experience it or somebody around them is going through the situation. So we really need to raise awareness so that people are cognizant of the fact that you may be going along very good, as Sadie said, until fourth or fifth stage when it is a dire need for dialysis. But we want that while people are in the first and to the third stage, that they do the right things in terms of healthy eating, exercise, those kind of things. So hopefully with, you know, a little awareness from the Barbados Kidney Association, we would be able to bring awareness to more people in Barbados.
Okay, so Sabrina, what challenges do you see happening around this type of sensitivity training, this level of awareness, where we will need to break some cultural barriers so that people feel a bit more comfortable and understanding around kidney failure?
I believe one of the biggest barriers that we have is the kidney patients themselves. I find that sometimes we tell ourselves it's a death sentence when you are diagnosed with end stage or even kidney disease. You tell yourself, well, you know, there's no more to life. And sometimes people don't even share their stories or experiences with others. And that is what we need as well. More of a sharing type situation where people, you know, make the public aware of the struggles of a kidney patient, the challenges of a kidney patient, even sometimes the family members, because as a caregiver, it is a very tedious thing to have to, you know, if you have to bring a patient to dialysis and the person is dialyzing for 3 to 4 hours, you bring them, but you might have your own stuff to do. You may not have a vehicle. You have to catch the bus and you have to go and run and do some errands and then try to get back to collect the person or assist the person, because everybody isn't able to manage on their own. Sometimes you need assistance. So those are the things that we might need more patients in general and caregivers of the patients to, you know, give their experiences of how the situation affected them and how they dealt with it and the things, the coping strategies, because sometimes it's good to give person coping strategies because everybody isn't as resilient as everyone else. So, you know, to bring awareness in that manner, it is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So Adrian, as vice president of the Barbados Kidney Association, share your thoughts about persons living with kidney failure, renal failure, and being employed. What do you see as some of the major challenges for that individual and the employer?
Hi, good morning. That's a very good question. Renal failure is, or has been, a disease that changes your life, and that is in all aspects and spheres, as my colleagues have mentioned earlier. In terms of the world of work, there are some persons who are able to manage day-to-day, 5 days a week, 9 to 5. But that is with some conditions and with the understanding that they're in need of special attention in a sense at work. In case if you have to do your dialysis or change your dialysis fluid during the day and so on, some employers would facilitate that. That's persons who are on PD or peritoneal dialysis and they do changes during the day. However, those that are hemo, they have to go to the hospital or the different dialysis sites and spend sometimes, as Sabrina mentioned, 3, sometimes 4 hours to have dialysis. And this would clearly affect their working day, especially in the public service. You're not sure, you're given a time in the morning, and because of the capacity that's there, you end up spending the entire day there, and that affects your work life, you know? Even in terms of scheduling your dialysis. So say, for example, a person like me who has to dialyze for 10 hours or so because I do peritoneal dialysis. I have to cater my dialysis time to fit if I were to have a job 9 o'clock in the morning to 5 and so on. So it can be very challenging. So you have the challenge of doing dialysis and the times, and also the facilities that are available at the workplace and the knowledge as well, not only to the boss and HR, but also to other employees as well. So there's a sensitization of the disease and how persons need to be catered to, right?
Can I add, Yudli, as well, regarding the kidney disease and the workplace and employers? Thank you for that, Adrian, for sure. We have to remember as well, or think about the fact that as employers, 2/3 of Barbadians are classified as overweight. We have a national crisis when it comes to NCDs. So like I would have said before, hypertension and diabetes, which can lead to kidney failure. Sabrina would have mentioned the fact that persons at stage 1 to 3, again, sometimes even at stage 4, may not even know they have kidney disease. So it is a very likely thing that with you as an employer in the workplace, there is someone or persons there who have kidney disease that's in your workplace right now that will eventually lead to kidney failure. So I think employers need to be more educated and aware of kidney disease in general, the aspects that lead to it. So we talk about workplace balance and the surroundings and the feel of the workplace as well. And that persons that have kidney disease or even on dialysis, once they're able to, should be able to feel there's an open door policy, let's say if you have an HR department, even to the boss, where they can say, okay, well, this is a problem I have, this is an issue that's happening. I still want to work. I am able to do so. However, these things have to be satisfied for me to be able to show up, you know, my best self and be able to give you certain hours of work. So I think there needs to definitely be more awareness, again, because as I said, our population is a national crisis at this point, and kidney disease is definitely going to be in there. And it is basically guaranteed that in a large workplace, let's say like Ministry of Tourism, Construction, the government, for sure, there are persons at your workplace that are currently suffering with kidney disease or going through stage 1 to 3. So there needs to, for sure, be more awareness and employers be cognizant of this.
May I add also to the previous point that there's a cognizant position that persons need to understand, especially employers, that they cannot target or discriminate as well to individuals with either renal failure or any health problems in terms of their employment there. You know, you may find cases where employers will say, well, I need productivity. And if you're not able to supplement or satisfy the output that we need, I have to let you go. You know, and these things are real situations that happen to individuals, not only with renal failure, but other diseases on a daily basis. So I think that that also needs to be, you know, brought to the forefront and addressed as well. You know, many persons will keep it on the hush, you know, and that kind of thing. And many might want to say, well, oh, we don't treat our workers badly, but you don't make facilitation for their need, right? And I think that was a very salient point that I wanted to just add.
Oh, yes, it's an extremely important point, because I don't think many people think of the ripple effects. Because if that individual becomes unemployed, maybe the only breadwinner in the household, then the family then is driven into poverty, where they're asked to go on social services, which is not as extensive as we would like to see, but it really weakens the family structure.
Yes, Yudeli, I heard Adrian's input, and that is extremely important as well. The Human Tissue Transplant Bill will, I don't even want to say revolutionize, but would ensure that, one, Adrian spoke about productivity. Now, understand that Barbados has a declining population. Most of our working population is aging. Our birth rate is low at this point in time. So you need to keep as many persons in the workplace unemployed as possible. Yeah. So it would stand to reason if the Human Tissue Transplant Bill were to be legislated, that were to be passed, it would allow so many more persons to get back to workplace, to get back to earning for their families, addressing our GDP problem. Persons think that dialysis and kidney disease is a lot for older people. That is not so. You have young people who are currently on dialysis that want something, may not be able to even attend school, far less in the job market. So the larger governance structure needs to think about that as well. So you have an aging population, our birth rate is low, you have persons unable to work because of kidney disease and other diseases, and something like the Human Tissue Transplant Bill could turn that around.
Okay, gentlemen and ladies, as we get ready to wind up the program, I would like each one of you to just share briefly how you developed kidney disease and how you have managed with it so far. You want to start with you, Adrian?
Sure, that's no problem. Usually I allow the ladies to go first, but if I'm given a gentleman's courtesy, I'll go ahead. I had contracted renal failure through hantavirus, being in contact with hantavirus. It is a rodent-borne disease similar to leptospirosis. However, it has a higher mortality output. So if an infected rodent urinates in dust or what have you, inhale it, along with the other conditions in contracting rodent-borne diseases, like touch and any open cuts or what have you, that is how you can contract hantavirus. And it started to affect the internal organs, the heart, liver, and kidneys, but the kidneys more severely. And at this stage, 2012, it was a very new disease to Barbados. I do a lot of blood tests that were taken from Trinidad to Florida for investigative work. and there was no cure for it. The body had naturally flaked it off, you know. And I want to thank the nurses and staff at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital at the time, was C5 and also C3, for being there for me during my time there. I'm managing, you know, pretty okay as can be, you know, when you have a diagnosis of end-stage renal failure and you have to start dialysis as a means of emergency. It's a sudden and very drastic change in a very short space of time. But as mentioned before, you need to have a very strong constitution, I would say, you know, both mentally, physically, and a good support system around you to help bring you through. Many persons don't have that, and it's a disadvantage, I would always say, and that's why the Barbados Kidney Association, we are looking to develop that fostering care for not only new renal patients, but the ones that exist as well, because they can be fighting their own battles in silence. We want to create a very home and comfortable based surrounding or environment that they can share and they can be fed into as well, you know, not only with knowledge, but also just if you want a listening ear, you know, something as simple as that. It took a while for me, I would say, in terms of dialysis. It took a while for me to adjust to it, you know, this daily thing. In terms of time and so on, it will cut into your social life in a sense. As time goes on, you learn to adapt. And I think that's one thing that many of my colleagues here would even agree to. You learn to adapt very quickly. Make the best of life that you have each day, you know. Every day is not going to be the same. It's not going to be a whole basket of roses. But you persevere and you strive and you fight. You know, there are many times you don't get any sleep during the night. And imagine then you have to get up in the morning and go to work and function as normal. So these are things that need to be taken into consideration. I think that life with renal failure is possible. As many have shown, we have a colleague in the association that has been on dialysis for 20 years plus. And he's still functioning and making the best of his life. So it's not an end to everything that is life, you know. It's a different chapter and you have to learn to adapt, right? And that's just my little 2 cents.
So with me, my kidney disease was hereditary and I would have found out just after I had my daughter. I had this pain in the right flank. And someone had said, you know, it's kidney stones, and you know how it is in Barbados, everybody has a diagnosis. So I actually went to the doctor and they did the tests, whole workup and everything, ultrasounds and whatever else. So then they realized that I had kidney disease, and it was between, as Sadie had said, Dr. Bell, Lisa Bell at the hospital, or Dr. Mohammed. And at that time, Lisa Bell didn't have her private practice. And because I was so early in kidney disease, I didn't want to go to the hospital as yet. So I went to Dr. Mohammed's private practice, and we managed the disease for a long time, about 15 years. We changed diets, managed blood pressures and those things for a long while. We had it under control. Then COVID stepped in. And with that, I started to deteriorate. My blood count went down to 3.4, and I had to go into the hospital for a transfusion. And from then, it was just hell bent on going in the opposite direction. So quickly afterwards, Dr. Mohammed suggested that I should get my access point for dialysis because we were on the point of no return. And I got my fistula done in 2023 on Valentine's Day, funny enough. And it matured by June of that same year. And by July, I was on dialysis. And as Adrian said, it is an adjustment and a hard adjustment as well, because, you know, you're accustomed doing stuff, going out, having lunch, having dinner, you know, going to parties, limes or whatever. And that is non-existent now for me, even working, because I can't work anymore. So it is just to clinic and basically home, nothing else. Sometimes you reminisce of the life that you had, and that, as he said, in terms of your mental health, sometimes you have to mourn that, or you have to grieve that loss, that you are no longer able to get up and run and do this or do that, even drive yourself places. Sometimes you need someone to assist you because you're not always capable of doing the things that you would have done before. The energy is not there. The drive is not there. Sometimes you just are existing. So that in itself, you need you know, a little support. And as you said, that's what we're trying to do as the Barbados Kidney Association, to assist our members and kidney patients to be able to cope with the changes in the lifestyle. Because as Sadie was saying, in terms of changing diet or whatever have you, sometimes you might be a seafood lover and it's this challenge that, you know, you have to tell yourself, oh, I can't eat this seafood anymore. For me, it was mangoes and coconut water because they're so high in potassium, we can't use them. So it was a challenge for me even to try to stop using those things.
Okay. Sadie-Anne, quickly.
Yes. I had high blood pressure, basically, in my mid-20s, coming on to the end of my 20s. I was actually diagnosed by my dentist when I went to get clean. She was like, your blood pressure is too high. Get that checked. And I ended up at Dr. Lisa Bell's practice and then disease management. So for 7 or 8 years, I was taking medication, as Sabrina said, managing the disease pretty well. And then it deteriorated where I had less than 10% functionality in my kidneys. So that then led to, again, talk about transplantation. And my brother, luckily, and my husband actually came forward to be tested to be a donor. And it ended up being my brother. He was a closer match. So that's, in essence, my short story there. And I have been a transplant recipient since November 2018. So I was on dialysis, peritoneal dialysis, for a year. And then I had my transplant. So yeah, life is good. You have to, again, measure success differently when you have become a kidney patient and transplant patient. Yes, you're no longer on dialysis, which is a huge relief. However, you have to look at medication management as well, fluid management as well. But again, you feel a whole lot better. These things, you're able to adapt, as well as Adrian and Sabrina spoke about. I just wanted to leave our listeners with the fact that, again, 2/3 of our Barbadian population have NCDs, non-communicable diseases. Of those, you have diabetes and hypertension, which can lead to kidney disease. We know about hereditary. Unfortunately, we can't do anything about that. And cases like Adrian's, where it was contracted through something else, that's highly unfortunate. But those persons who have some control over it, let's look at our diets, ladies and gentlemen. Let's look at seeing the doctor once a year at least and get the kidney function done, blood pressure done. Look at our diet as a society on a whole to lessen the incidence of kidney disease, renal failure, hypertension, diabetes, those things that lead to kidney disease. Again, let's look at our aging population, our low birth weight, and understand that we have a large population that will definitely be on dialysis. We're getting more and more dialysis patients every year. The nurses and doctors at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital can tell you that. Those at SILS can tell you that. And we as the Kidney Association want to reduce that. We want the government as well to look at the fact that it costs about 60,000 Barbados annually for a dialysis patient, as opposed to 20,000 Barbados annually to give medication to somebody who is a transplant patient. We have to look at our workforce, and we just generally have to look at our population and understand that the Human Tissue Transplant Bill will incredibly change the lives of so many people and our entire society. So Barbados Kidney Association is hoping and pushing for that.
Thank you so much, Sadie-Anne Cisnett, President of the Barbados Kidney Association, Adrian Boyce, Vice President, and Sabrina Newton, Public Relations Officer, for so ably sharing with us today about kidney disease in Barbados. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudeli Wickham-Ashby, and my special guests from the Barbados Kidney Association today, sharing all about kidney disease in Barbados. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. So until next week, please love yourself and love your neighbor just as much as you love yourself. So until then, ciao.